Okay. What do you call William Shakespeare in the past tense? Would I was Shookspeared.
Welcome to the Canadian Cycling Magazine podcast. I'm Matthew Piero, editor of Canadian Cycling Magazine. We just heard from Felix Burke there. He had a bit of a joke for us. It's a bit of a riddle. It's a bit of a grammar exercise, but his delivery makes that one infectious. The mountain biker gave us this gag because this is our pre-April Fool's edition of the podcast. It's also the pre-Bear Mountain Canada Cup weekend edition. Burke won that series overall in 2018. We'll talk more about Bear Mountain later in the episode. And social media editor Dan Walker rejoins me with co-hosting duties. Welcome back, Dan.
Yes, back from the land down under.
Oh, yes. Yes. I'm going to get into my jealousy of watching everybody in my social feeds, you know, ride in warm
riding somewhere warm, mm-hmm. Doing a little preseason base miles in the sun.
Yeah, how was that in very few words?
Not terrible.
Okay, great.
No koalas or kangaroos. Disappointing.
Perfect.
Yeah, Milan San Remo this weekend. How did you watch?
How did I watch this past Milan San
Remo? How
many
chores did you accomplish during the 300 kilometers?
I tweeted that. Now, of course, I just watched what was broadcast on Flow Bikes. And I made breakfast. I paid some bills. I folded some laundry. I really tied it up.
Are you allowed to have the race on TV, or is that dedicated to like Paw Patrol or something like that?
No. We're down with bike races on a weekend morning. It just most of my family ignores it, but it's there. Yeah.
Yeah. So you say no to morning cartoons and yes to bike racing.
My child's never going to watch Saturday morning cartoons.
Nice.
And you, how did you watch it?
I watched a brief snippet live.
Oh.
Then I went out for breakfast. Came back, watched like the last 60, 70K on replay.
Whoa.
There might have been a nap in there too.
Wow, you really broke it up.
I know. Comparing to last year's all-out trainer ride for the last 100K.
I know, I was impressed by that. I was hoping you'd repeat.
No.
All right.
No. I learned my lesson.
In this episode, I speak with Molly Herford. In the current issue of Canadian Cycling Magazine, she has a feature about planning and having the best training camp ever. Our discussion touches on some of those tips from her story, and it brings up some new ideas about what you can get out of an early season training camp. And of course, with Dan's return, also comes the return of...
Full Send, No Send.
Yes, everybody's favorite segment. I'm not even going to preview any of the topics. They're gonna
Don't
be
let
surprised.
Them know. They're going to be surprised.
Okay, stay tuned for that. Finally, Bear Mountain. It brings top mountain bikers to the trails near Victoria. The event is the first stop in the Canada Cup Series, the cross-country and downhill races that have helped develop many of the country's best riders. We'll hear from the race director of Bear Mountain, John Watkin, later in the show. First, how to win at your training camp. Spoiler, it's not about crushing people on the climbs. It's the end of March, which I'd say is the middle of training camp season. Maybe you have one lined up or are at one right now. If you're like me, your social feeds are full of friends of yours riding around in places warmer than where you are. Can you sense my jealousy? Contributor Molly Herford has been to 3 camps this year for a total of 7 weeks of endurance training. Yeah, that makes me jealous too. She drew on that experience for a story in the current issue of Canadian Cycling Magazine. It's all about how to have the best training camp ever. Molly Herford, welcome to the Canadian Cycling Magazine podcast. How are you doing?
Thanks. I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
So we're going to talk training camps and how to get the most out of them. You're a bit of a training camp expert, as you've been to 3 in 2019.
Yeah, it's been a bit of a haul in the last couple of months, I'm not going to lie.
But you've got some insights out of that and out of your experiences, and we're going to get into them. But first, I want you to tell me about a training camp you did in Southern California and the role that a Rubik's Cube played at this camp.
Yeah, so this is actually the first training camp I did this season. It was with the national team. We were doing an endurance road camp for the mountain bikers. And Raph Eau Claire showed up with one Rubik's Cube, and I swear somehow they started multiplying overnight. I didn't realize that teenagers or, you know, young men and women could get so invested in solving Rubik's Cubes as fast as they did. But the phones were away and the Rubik's Cubes were out and people were keeping timers, drawing diagrams. It was serious business.
I guess maybe I'm reading a bit of the competitive nature of these mountain bikers into the Rubik's cubing, if that's a verb.
Oh, big time. Big time.
But the point you made about the phones going away, I think that's why this is a kind of an important element, I believe, for a training camp in the evening routine. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you're going on a training camp, whether you're going with your team or, you know, with the provincial or national team, or you're just going with your buddies, you know, it kind of stinks to spend your whole night sitting on your phone, scrolling through Instagram, seeing what everyone else in the world is doing when you're at this really cool place and you could be interacting with the people that you're there with. So to see teenagers actually doing just that and interacting with each other, playing this actual physical game, was actually really inspiring.
Nice. And then none of that screen time that would maybe interfere with the sleep that they should probably be getting, which would help them ride well the next day, kind of thing.
Oh, exactly. I mean, when you're doing, you know, 5 or 6 hours on the bike every day, you've got to be sleeping, you know, at least 8 hours, if not 10. So yeah, not having that blue light in the evening, I think, was really key for getting lights out for 9 p.m.
Nice. 9 p.m. That sounds
amazing. I know. Even on New Year's Eve.
Nice. That shows some discipline. So mm-hmm. We've got some insights into what makes a good maybe evening routine at a training camp. But let's step back a bit and think about the planning phase. What are some of the considerations that might go into the planning and the logistics that make for a successful camp?
Yeah, I think the first one is picking your crew and kind of setting your expectations for the camp. You know, obviously when you're doing a provincial or national team camp, it's really easy. You're there to ride and it's very serious. But if you're, you know, just in a cycling club or something, some of your cycling buddies might want to go and, you know, maybe ride if the weather is good, but are totally fine to just chill out, you know, crack a beer at, say, like 3 p.m. And you might not be kind of on that party route. So just kind of setting that expectation for the camp. I know I actually just met friends that were on another training camp after I finished a provincial training camp. I went to their training camp and the vibe was markedly different. There was a lot more wine on the table, we'll say. Mm-hmm. Still some serious riding, but, you know, they knew exactly what they were getting into. They were going to ride hard, party hard. Emphasis on the party hard. So knowing your crew and setting your expectation is huge. And setting how much you're going to be riding, right? Some people are newer to cycling and a 50-kilometer day might be the biggest day that they've ever done versus, you know, you might be thinking, oh, the minimum we'd ride would be 100K. So trying to kind of find some like-minded and like physically abled people who can actually do the same kind of riding with you, and they're not going to be sitting on your wheel holding on for dear life while you pedal into the great unknown and get them lost in the wilderness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. Now, should I train for my training camp?
Absolutely. So I think so many of us are super guilty of this. We, you know, maybe get on the trainer for 30 minutes, an hour, a couple days a week. And, you know, then we head to this training camp kind of expecting to come back with a ton of fitness. Like, oh, yeah, this 10 days is going to set me up for the season. But if you haven't been training for the training camp, the odds are pretty good that after day one, you're going to end up with a saddle sore. After day two, you're going to have extremely tired legs. And after day three, you're going to be so bonked that you're not going to want to ride on day four. So you do want to do a slow build into the training camp so you're ready for that kind of volume.
No, that totally makes sense, because it's not like, yeah, you've been doing that volume beforehand. Why would you think you could just pop into it without, you know, right off the couch kind of thing?
Exactly. And if you're not prepared for it, you're almost definitely going to come back feeling sick and, you know, waste another week or two recovering from being sick from this training camp, losing all of the fitness that you gained. So it's better to be prepared and slow build, go into the camp, and then come back and be able to keep training on that same consistent level.
Related to that, when I get to camp, and when everybody arrives, what should the pace be, or what kind of rides should the campers begin with?
Yeah, we're huge fans of the endurance pace, which very few people can actually ride. So I spend a good chunk of the camps that I've coached this season telling people to slow down and, you know, trying to watch other people's heart rate monitors and explain that 180 is not an endurance heart rate, no matter how young or how fit you are. We really want to go endurance, this really low, calm pace that might feel kind of boring. You should be able to have a conversation during it. You probably haven't ridden at this pace before, to be honest. It's going to feel slow to start, but you're going to feel way better by the end of the week, I promise you. So pretty much as you're riding, look at what you're doing and try to dial it back 5%. If you're on a hill, try to dial it back 10%.
Mm. Now, maybe this is just going back to the setting the vibe, but like, what happens if maybe some people want to jam on the road or on their bikes? Like, should you set aside, like, this is the day, maybe second last day is when we get a bit feisty on the road? Or is it, do you recommend more discipline?
You know, it's really hard to say, because I mean, for some people, that's going to be the fun part of the camp, is going to be that day that you really get to go pretty hard. What we've done, and what I think is a great one, is setting your second to last day as like one of the big climb days. So I just did a camp in Tucson, and our second to last day was climbing Mount Lemon, which is Tucson's like famous 25-mile mountain. And
which
we
is, I
just
think, close to 40 kilometers Canadians.
Yeah, exactly. Sorry. The American in me just popped up. So with the girls we had at that camp, we had our head coach lead them out, and I stayed and rode sag, and we let them just go whatever pace they wanted to go. So if they wanted to do that as just a chill endurance ride, they absolutely could. But if that was the day they really wanted to kind of test their legs, that was great too. And we had a mix. You know, some of the girls kept it pretty chill. Some of the girls pretty much raced to the top. And then the next day we finished it with just a 3-hour, nice, steady, low-key ride. You never want to have your hardest day be your last day, would be the one recommendation. So the queen stage, the second to last day, is the perfect day to give her, if that's what you're feeling.
Nice.
But don't feel like you need to.
Now, back to the Airbnb or the place that is the camp's home base. What are some top tips for group living?
Yeah, I'm kind of obsessed with this question because I obviously travel so much and live in so many different Airbnbs. The first thing to do is actually count the beds that they list and not just look at what the thing sleeps. I've been caught out so many times in Airbnbs, and we actually had this happen to us, one of these camps that we just did, where it says it sleeps 14, but there's actually only 7 beds in the whole house. And, you know, the rooms are super tiny, so now you're out trying to get air mattresses and fit the air mattresses in, because, you know, it's just not comfortable to be sharing beds with your training buddies, to be honest. Mm-hmm. It's very rare that cyclists make for quiet, comfortable sleepers. Usually you need a lot more space. You probably need an open window. Let's be totally honest here. Right. So making sure you actually pick a space that fits your crew, and a place that has a washer dryer. You will be so happy if you don't have to go to a laundromat every other day. It's the nicest feeling to be able to come home and throw in a load of laundry. Dishwashers, also a plus.
Definitely, definitely. That infrastructure will just make things a bit smoother with the day to day. Now, what are some fueling tips you might have for the person who gets to their training camp and needs to remember, may not be as conscious for taking calories in, because, you know, when you're on the old trainer, you're only there for about an hour. It's not such a big deal.
Definitely. First tip, training camps, not weight loss camps. This is not the time to decide that you're into intermittent fasting and you're going to skip breakfast or you're only going to have salads for dinner or anything like that. No, you need to fuel yourself on and off the bike. This is not the time to make drastic changes, no matter how tempting it might be to, you know, picture yourself coming back super ripped and lean and whatever. It's not going to happen. You're just going to come back bonked and unhappy. So first things first, eat a lot off the bike. And it can be healthy food, but you need to be eating a lot of it to make up for what you're burning when you're riding. The next thing is you need to be good at eating and drinking on the bike, or you need to make it clear that you're going to need to stop to eat and drink. And I was surprised at how many people I've talked to recently who actually aren't comfortable eating or drinking on group rides. So, you know, they're stopping every half an hour to eat and drink, and, you know, that's fine, but that is a skill that you can be practicing before you leave for training camp. And if, you know, if you can't eat on the bike, then for the love of God, please put a lot of drink mix in your bottles and somehow just make sure you're getting that 200 to 400 calories per hour for calories, and at least drinking a whole bottle every hour, you know, more if it's hot out, but that's like the bare minimum.
Final question, and it's sort of circling back to one of my earlier questions. We talked about managing expectations for you know, ahead of the camp, but what should your expectations be coming out of a camp? We've talked about maybe some of the dangers of, you know, going too hard and you could get sick, but like should I be expecting to start podiuming at local races, or how should I view this camp in terms of my season?
That's a great question, and I mean, obviously part of the answer is it depends, you know, on what how the timing of this camp worked out. But, you know, you're going to come back and you're going to be really well endurance trained, provided you keep training. I know a lot of people that, you know, come back from these camps and go right back to those 30-minute, hour-long trainer rides a couple times a week. And, you know, within 3 or 4 weeks, their training is, their volume has decreased enough that the training camp almost didn't make a dent in their fitness at all. You want to come back feeling excited, feeling good, feeling like you want to keep this trend going. And, you know, then you can start shifting to that more race specific, you know, intensity and actually planning for your race season versus you're now endurance trained. That's not going to really translate to a super speedy, you know, 40-minute cross race or hour long mountain bike race. So you're still going to need to do some work. You can't just ride a training camp for the whole season and be like, ah, yes, but I did Moab back in January, so I'm totally going to crush this race in August. Sadly, fitness does not work like that. But it's a really great springboard into your spring training.
Molly, thanks very much.
Thanks for having me.
Molly Herford is a contributor to Canadian Cycling Magazine. She was the assistant coach on the Cycling Canada Next Gen Camp for mountain bikers earlier this year. Also, look out for Shred Girls this May. It's Molly's work of young adult fiction featuring rad girls on bikes.
Hey, Matt.
What's up?
We got a sponsor.
Oh, that's great. Who is it?
Well, they're challenging you to do something epic. It's the Ride to Conquer Cancer, Canada's largest cycling fundraiser.
That's awesome. No, this is a very cool event because it's a great charity, but it's also a great ride, and it's a ride that can get riders of all kind involved.
Yeah, so it's 2 days, over 200 kilometers. So that's a good challenge. And you know what? That makes it worth it, you know, all that training you're doing right now in the winter. Something like this is a great goal to shoot for.
Right, so you sign up and you can raise vital funds to support cancer research, treatment advances, education, and new standards of care at cancer centers and research facilities across Canada.
So as you probably know, almost 1 in 2 Canadians will be diagnosed with cancer in their lifetime, and this is one of those charities that's going to have you riding to change that.
So what should people do, Dan?
Register today at conquercancer.ca and save $50 when you use the promo code PODCAST at signup. Again, that's promo code PODCAST, PODCAST, at conquercancer.ca.
Oh.
All right.
All right.
On your marks. 5 seconds on the clock.
5 seconds.
And by five seconds, that was definitely 5 minutes.
Good.
Ready? And go.
Full send, no send. What's our first topic,
Dan? All right. Not sure if you know this. Team Sky looking for a sponsor this year.
They found one.
Team Ineos.
Right. As of May 1st, I believe.
Yeah, at the Tour de Yorkshire, where all good brands and teams are launched.
Okay.
They will be taking over the ownership, sponsorship of Team Sky.
Yeah.
Now, Ineos is a chemical company that makes all plastics that we use in our pens and all sorts of everyday products. Of course, plastics made from petrochemicals.
Yes.
Another petrochemical company coming into the Pro Peloton is Total, taking over from Direct Energie.
Way.
Yes, sir. And full say no send, Petrochem's sponsoring such a green activity.
Okay. I have to take issue with your premise right there.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we don't burn gasoline when we commute to work or bike around the city.
Mm-hmm.
However, have you watched the tour? Have you watched a stage of a...
There are a lot of buses.
There are team buses. Mm-hmm. There are motos. There are helicopters beaming satellite...
I'm guessing those things. Aren't all off solar generators?
No.
No.
So, you know what? It's in a way, it sort of makes sense.
Mm.
Even though, like, it... Yes, most people think of bikes as very green. And they are, to a certain extent... But bike racing, I question the greenness of bike racing.
It's tough because last year, Sky was going full, no plastics, save the ocean, look at these cute whales on our backs.
Yes.
This is kind of a turn, this character turn for this one. They've gone heel.
I know. It does speak to the sort of opportunism or sheer pragmatism you need to have for a bike team.
If possible, they've got the meanest team in the Peloton has gone even more of a heel turn. They're like Team Iceland and the Mighty Ducks, but worse.
I've never seen the Mighty Ducks. Iceland's the bad guys?
And Mighty Ducks. Mighty Ducks 2. Anyways, we'll talk about this later.
Yes, please.
Moving on.
So I would say, it's weird. I guess I'm saying full send, but that doesn't mean I'm like, yay, petrochemical companies, but I can't say no send because I can't
they
really...
keep the team in the Peloton.
I can't really hold the team to task for... choosing that company, but
well, guys, Matthew doesn't even own a car, so that he's doing his part,
right? I've sort of got my carbon trading going on.
Okay, that's just 2.5 minutes. Moving on.
Oh dear, moving on.
Yeah. Okay, Milan San Remo is this weekend. It's 300 kilometers.
Mm-hmm.
Watching the race live or watching it on replay? Full send, no send.
Oh, that's well live if you can. It's a sporting event. I firmly believe. That is where the most drama is if you're watching it live. In fact, last year I tricked myself. I forgot that it wasn't on Sunday. I found a feed and I watched it as if it was live because I didn't know who won and I didn't know the race had run the day before.
If you have the social media discipline to pull this off, and I was very disciplined Saturday morning, watch it on replay. It lets you nap. So if you miss something, you can always go back and rewind. And for something like Milan San Remo, really, you can just skip to the last 60K.
That's like watching the last 5 minutes of a basketball game. Isn't it about
it's
watching
not.
The whole thing? Okay, no send.
No send. Full, no.
Ah, tricked
replay.
You.
Yeah. Moving
no,
on.
No send on replay.
Okay. You're riding under 100 clicks. Maybe it's on gravel. Can you justify a frame or a bar bag?
Oh, that's tough because like... I sometimes end up jamming a lot of junk in my jersey pockets. Mm-hmm. A bar bag might be nice. I don't have this equipment, so I am bar bag curious at the moment.
You're bar bag curious?
I would like to try that out, see how it goes. Or does it just mean something else to fuss with? Or does it lead to junk creep? Like I'm just packing to fill these bags.
I think it's junk creep. It's like you get a new backpack,
yeah,
and then all of a sudden there's like little bits and bobs that end up in the bottom of it at the end of, you know, 3 weeks. You've got like wrappers and crumbs and that kind of thing.
Like my panniers on any given day.
Facts. I'm going to shout out the one guy I was riding with on Sunday.
Yeah.
He broke a whole bag of Haribos in his frame bag. Now you've got Haribo everywhere. Crumbs mixed with...
We're talking the gummies.
Gummies, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now you got Haribo loose everywhere, mixing in with all your other crumbs.
Collecting dust.
Yeah. Those snacks are reduced to irrelevant. See.
Okay. Yeah. Well, you know, this is more of a cautionary tale about maybe you need a special Haribo gummy bag. How are we doing for time?
5 seconds. So I'm no send on less than 100 kilometers for frames and bar bags.
I will go with that until further notice, and we're out of time. Wow, are we getting good at this? We totally nailed it.
Some might say we are.
Full send. I'm patting myself on the back. Mountain bike season in Canada has begun. And by Canada, I mean Victoria. Well, actually, the city of Langford, just west of Victoria. That's where the Bear Mountain Bike Festival is. It features the first cross-country races of this year's Canada Cup Series. Top riders, such as Catherine Pendrell, Haley Smith, and Raphael Gagné, have included this event in their calendars since it first appeared in 2016. Recently, Canadian MTB editor Terry McCall spoke with event organizer John Watkin to preview the action at Bear Mountain.
My name is John Watkin, and I'm the race director for the Bear Mountain Bike Festival, which features the kickoff UCI Canada Cup race presented by Powerade.
Awesome. And that's a good point to start with. It's not just the Canada Cup. So what else is involved?
Just to clarify too, like, the festival atmosphere was a way to try to bring as much of the community into the event. Weekend warriors, families with kids, different disciplines of riding, so not just cross-country riding, but also enduro, and there's also an electric bike component too. But I think that for us it was just a way to try to bring in a broader group of people. You know, and it's also, you know, from compared to other major cycling events in BC, like, you know, Crankworx, for example, we wanted to be more grassroots. We also wanted to be more inclusive, really drive the participation, active participation of the event, right? And that's something we're going to continue to build with, and that's not to say that we won't continue to build the high performance piece, whether it's, you know, when the enduro series expands and there becomes more of a UCI framework for running domestic events. You know, we might see UCI Enduro, short track racing is another format. There's this new electric racing category that the UCI has also rolled out. So it's quite interesting to see what's going on there and how best we can, you know, branch out into different domains. Yeah.
Awesome. So for this year, Canada Cup Cross Country is still the big events. Who are some of the names that are coming, that you're expecting to have at the festival this year?
We think almost the entire Canadian national mountain bike team. They'll want to hit the ground running this time of year to get some early UCI points. So obviously, three-time world champion Catherine Pendrell will be there. I think Emily Batty is going to be there. She's going to be choosing to race and stay south of the border just to build up her training. Mm-hmm. Sandra Walter will be there on the men's side, we expect. A good selection of the men's team, although in terms of the, you know, if you kind of look at where we are now on the racing calendar, we're building up towards an Olympic year. So this is where the athletes want to really present themselves to be strong and early contenders to make the selection team for 2020 Tokyo. Leonce is obviously, Leandre, sorry, he's looking at doing really well early on. We also got to look at Andrew L'Esperance, the DeSera brothers are always in the mix. And then I think, you know, not only that, but I think it's important to highlight the fact that we've got some amazing young riders that are really coming up through the system. So locally here, we've got Carter Woods, rides for Rocky Mountain. Emily Johnston, who's part of Catherine Pendrell's Pendrell Racing Team. This will really be a great opportunity to see these new athletes coming through the system and building up, and actually, you know, get to interact with some of their heroes too, right? So, and you never know. I mean, a race like this might also bring some surprises, and that's what we like about this kind of racing. Yeah.
And you mentioned some of the younger athletes coming, and that's one of the things that Bear Mountain Festival has done for the last couple of years. It's been part of the UCF Junior Series.
Yes.
And that's helped attract some talent from around the world.
Yes.
I think last year there was some Danish and some definitely a bunch of American racers.
Yeah.
Are you expecting any other international appearances this year for that?
Yeah. We've got... So Mark Gullickson, who is with the United States Cycling Federation, he's confirmed 8 riders racing the junior series. And so that'll continue to keep that level of caliber fairly high for that age group. We might see some elite riders coming through as well. No confirmation yet as far as whether we'll see some riders from Europe or South America. Like you said, we did have a Danish rider last year, and we also had some riders coming from Chile.
Awesome. And what was the point of adding the UCI Junior Series to that? Like, that gives the kids an opportunity to...
Yeah, I mean, that was a... from a Canada Cup perspective, that was a Cycling Canada decision.
Right.
And I think it... I think the intent was to kind of bring the younger riders more exposure to high-caliber racing. So that when they are... transitioning out of junior into U23 elite, they kind of already have that experience of international competition. So there's a mental preparedness aspect, but there's also kind of, it lets the riders understand that if they want to compete at that level, they're able to see how the Americans are doing it, how the Europeans are doing it, how the South Americans are doing it. So it's a huge learning experience, you know. It's hard to be a young kid and you get thrown into international competition and there's a huge adjustment curve, right? So, it's going to be, again, you also get a good sense of who are going to be the rising stars in the sport.
Yeah. Okay. So this is a really early race in the season compared to some of the other Canada Cups. So why is this so early in the calendar?
It's early in the calendar because... especially the riders that are racing across North America and Europe, you know, UCI points are extremely important. So it's good to get early access to points because when you show up at the start line in other races, the riders with the highest points typically get the call up to the front lines of the race. So it's always good to get that. I mean, in other sports like cyclocross, whether you're first line, second line, or third line makes a huge difference in terms of how well you can do in that race, right? Or it makes it more difficult to get a decent result. So points are king, and points are also important when you're trying to negotiate or renegotiate your next pro contract, right? So, all those things factor in.
And there's not a ton of other opportunities early on in the season to get Canadian points. Short track was a new addition to the calendar last year, and you guys offered a short track at Bear Mountain as well. How is that event shaping up for this year?
It should be good. I mean, short track is still kind of it's still new, and you know, there's a delicate balance between offering a race that's really short and intense, and also providing a very good user experience for the spectators, right? So short track kind of is really exciting. It's typically only like a 15, 20 minute race. It usually means the riders are less spread out. It's more dynamic. It's almost like an old dirt crit, right? But I still think there's some opportunities to continue to build that format. I think cross country racers kind of look at it as secondary event, and whereas the primary is the XCO. But if we can bill it as an event that's well attended, and it's got lots of for the elite riders, more cash for prizes, and it creates that kind of a dynamic, we think that formula will continue to build it as we move forward. Plus the other thing too is, you know, you want to see consistency in all the Canada Cup races. So if all the Canada Cups are using short track as well as XCO, then the expectation is consistent throughout, right? So.
And for the XCO track, you guys made some pretty big changes to the course this year?
Yeah, we've reduced the distance. So we've gone from 6K to 5.3. If back 3 years ago, we used a part of the trail called the Flow Trail, which was a very smooth, swoopy flow trail with berms and banks, and it was a really fun part of the race in 2017, and the racers loved it. We didn't use it for 18 and 19, and we're bringing it back for 2020. But the other thing we're doing is we're bringing the race closer to the start finish as possible, so that spectators, coaches, they get to see the riders more often. So I think it'll just make things a lot more exciting. Instead of you seeing the riders once every 20 minutes, you're going to see the riders every 5, every 10 minutes. So that'll be fun. And then we expect the photography and the video visuals to be just spectacular, you know, as a result. So I think the riders will enjoy it. I think it'll make the racing more of a compressed, whereas, you know, in past years, you kind of knew within the second lap who was going to win. This, I think, will kind of change the dynamic of the race a little bit.
So other than the two cross-country races, what other events are part of the weekend?
So we're doing a kids event. This event, you know, we're just getting kids from the community to participate. I think our goal is to get over 100 kids. And this is done through a local bike shop, Oak Bay Bikes West Shore. And we're just basically giving the kids an opportunity to learn how to ride with some of the local coaches, learn some skills, interact with some of the mountain biking celebrities and heroes. And then, you know, it's just a good way to plant the seed, and hopefully we can take a sampling of those kids and inspire them to maybe get into joining a club and maybe do some basic, you know, competition, right? I mean, that's the goal, is you want to kind of get kids started early, make sure they're enjoying and having fun, and then if there's an opportunity to build a pathway towards high performance, then this is the platform to do it. The other event that we have is the Rocky Mountain Enduro. This is presented by another local bike shop called Marty's Mountain Cycle, and this is a Vancouver Island Cup Enduro Series. So Vancouver Island's kind of created a really thriving grassroots movement in enduro racing and cross country, and we're going to be the kickoff event for that. And we've got 5 runs of beautiful enduro trails around Bear Mountain. And it's going to be a blast. You know, we're hopeful that this could pave the way for expanding our enduro platform into more of a provincial or maybe a national scale. That obviously would require more investment in terms of building more trails, but enduro racing is just thriving in not only on Vancouver Island, but all over BC, right? So we want to definitely tap into that market and continue to build and make it grow.
Awesome. Yep. Sounds good.
Yeah.
Thanks for talking to me. Good luck with the racing.
Thank you.
John Watkin is the race director of the Bear Mountain Bike Festival. And that's the episode. It's put together by me, Matthew Piaro, Dan Walker, and Terry McCall, with help from Philippe Tremblay. It's produced by Adam Killick. Thanks to the Ontario Media Development Corporation for its support. Also, send us your ideas for Full Send, No Send to podcast@cyclingmagazine.ca.
Now, if you want more great cycling news, check us out at cyclingmagazine.ca. There, you can also find our social media channels if you need a little more Canadian cycling in your life. And if you're listening to this podcast, please download and subscribe wherever you do listen to podcasts.
Yes, there's so many ways to find us out there. And, okay, I know you usually ask me who we should recommend our podcast to this week. I'm going to tell you. I'm ready for this one. Tell your contractor. I ran into a contractor the other week. He wasn't doing anything for me, but he has long drives. He's in his half ton a lot. And also, he probably knows more about cyclocross than anybody in this country. He worked on the Winnipeg Nats. But,
does he build a flyover or two?
I think he's built a flyover or two in his lifetime. Yes. Anyway, I recommended our podcast, and I hope he's listening to it right now in his pickup. Have you recommended
to a contractor? I actually recommended it to a contractor just the other day. Not only is he a contractor, he is a contractor on the route of the Eager Beaver gravel race up in Singhampton, Ontario.
Oh, so, nice.
Shout out to WW Contracting.
Wow, there's a plug. You know, if you want to send us a check for that. Anyway, recommend and also please rate and review. That helps us a lot. I like 5 stars. I think that's the number of stars to go
with. And only if it's something nice.
Thank you, everyone. We'll talk to you later.